From the studios of KXCI Community Radio in Tucson, Arizona, I'm King David McKenzie with The Truth. Here's some of how the world is treating itself today, the 20th of April, 2009. First off, the major event of the weekend, the Tucson Roller Derby doubleheader at Blade World on Saturday night. In the first bout, the Copper Queens upset the current TRD champion Vice Squad 60-47. The women in blue jumped out to an early unanswered lead for the first six jams, which the Copper Queens began whittling down by the 17th jam, in which CQ jammer Pixie Axe took the lead away from the Vice Squad and promptly wiped out headfirst all the way into the roller hockey rink sideboards, dislocating her shoulder. The wipeout was due to a particularly stiff check from Vice defender Deadlock Doe, who was ejected from the track for the night. The lead switched back at the very beginning of the second half, thanks to a 12-point jam by number 22 Sammy Automatic, which was eventually tied by number 321 K Boom of the Copper Queens four jams later. The CQ finally pulled ahead for good three jams after that. In the second bout, the Iron Curtain continued its greatest season ever by destroying the furious Truck Stop Waitresses by an incredible 99-point margin, 113-14. The FTW actually pulled ahead by the fifth jam of that game, but in the sixth, Bianca Troll of the IC put the women in red ahead, and they never looked back, thanks largely to the defensive artistry of the Arizona legend, Helen Wheels, and the scoring of both Bianca and the apparent rookie of the year-to-be, Lucifer. Halftimes were taken up by exhibition bouts featuring the TRD's Junior League, the Derby Brats, with the Natural Disasters outpacing the Injustice League on both occasions. The next scheduled bout will be taking place on the 9th of May at Blade World, with the Iron Curtain challenging the Vice Squad. As always, further information on all of this is at TucsonRollerDerby.com. Tell them KDM sent you. President Obama has really got me PO'd over the last week or so. First was that foolishness in handing Fixed Noise Channel a yakking point that you just know that they won't let go of until Pentecost Sunday. And that's the screw-up of making a speech at the Jesuit private university Georgetown and then blocking stained glass windows and a crucifix from TV camera views. When Catholic Americans complained, the White House issued some mealy-mouthed statement to the effect that the president did not want to convey the idea that the speech had religious overtones. If that's the case, why didn't Obama make the speech at the White House instead? But then, this morning, we hear from the Washington Post that the White House is rejecting calls for the prosecution of the Justice Department officials who wrote those infamous memos justifying the torture of Guantanamo Bay prisoners. One of those perps happens to be former Assistant Attorney General Jay Bybee, who, thanks to Junior Bush, now sits on the Ninth Circuit United States Court of Appeals, said circuit covering the state of Arizona. That's your court, Tucson. Is it now time to suggest someone take Obama and Rahm Emanuel and slap some sense into them by reminding them that when they refuse to prosecute war criminals, that makes them into war criminals themselves? There's a website called 24/7 Wall Street that just listed a dozen brands that they say will disappear by the end of the next year. They are Avis Car Rentals, Borders Booksellers, Crocs Shoes, Saturn Automobiles, the Hearst Newspaper Chain, whether or not Hearst Argyle Broadcasting is going too, was not discussed by the website, the Gap and or Old Navy, Eddie Bauer, Palm, several Condé Nast magazines, perhaps including Vanity Fair or Architectural Digest, Chrysler, which as a brand is doing terribly against corporate mates Dodge and Jeep, and United Airlines. Of these, perhaps Borders will be the one that I miss the most, even though I'm wearing a pair of Crocs as I write and narrate this program, and my uncle used to work for American Motors around the time that they were taken over by Chrysler in the 80s. Yesterday and today have far too much human misery associated with the dates. The Branch Davidian massacre 16 years ago. Oklahoma City bombing 14 years ago. Columbine High School massacre 10 years ago. And somewhere in the world, some idiot is trying to fit 120 candles onto a birthday cake for Adolf Hitler. If yesterday or today is your birthday, you have my sympathy. Mine happens to be the 9th of February, on which date in 1950, 11 years before I was born, the junior senator from Wisconsin, the state where I was born, Joseph McCarthy, told the Wheeling, West Virginia Republican Women's Club that he had a list of 205 communists working in the State Department, and McCarthyism began its horrendous blight of the American social landscape. So my birthday is hardly spick and span in and of itself. But this is 420, the Pothead Christmas, as someone referred to it in a conversation with me this weekend. And today the Huffington Post has probably the best piece I have ever read against marijuana prohibition from a law enforcement angle. The writer is Norm Stamper, retired police chief of Seattle, Washington, and member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, whose website URL is copssaylegalizeddrugs.com. I'll bet you never expected to see that one seriously used by anybody. Anyway, here is the piece, and it's some choice stuff. Put this in your pipe and, well, you get the idea. As 5 p.m. rolls around, my interior clock starts chiming. I'll have an ice-cold, bone-dry martini, thank you. Jalapeno olives and a twist. If the occasion calls for it, temperatures in the 20s, a hot political debate on the tube, I may substitute 2 fingers of Kentucky Sour Mash. 420? Doesn't resonate. But with April 20 approaching and Waldos of the world gearing up to celebrate their favorite day of the year, it's not a bad time to consider yet again the pluses and minuses of alcohol versus cannabis. First, a disclaimer. I am a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, but I don't officially represent the organization in this forum. That said, I can't very well check my affiliation or beliefs at the keyboard when I sit down to blog for HuffPost. We at LEAP are current and former cops and other criminal justice practitioners who have witnessed firsthand the futility and manifold injustices of the drug war. Our professional experiences have led us to conclude that the more dangerous an illicit substance, from crack to crank, the greater the justification for its legalization, regulation, and control. It is the prohibition of drugs that leads inexorably to high rates of death, disease, crime, and addiction. Back to booze versus pot. How do the effects of these two drugs stack up against specific health and public safety factors? Alcohol-related traffic accidents claim approximately 14,000 lives each year, down significantly from 20 or 30 years ago, attributed to improved education and enforcement. Figures for THC-related traffic fatalities are elusive, especially since alcohol is almost always present in the blood as well, and since the numbers of marijuana-only traffic fatalities are so small. But evidence from studies, including laboratory simulations, feeds the stereotype that those under the influence of cannabinoids tend to, 1, be more aware of their impaired psychomotor skills, and 2, drive well below the speed limit. Those under the influence of alcohol are much more likely to be clueless or defiant about their condition, and to speed up and drive recklessly. Hundreds of alcohol overdose deaths occur annually. There has never been a single recorded marijuana OD fatality. According to the American Public Health Association, excessive alcohol consumption is the third leading cause of death in this country. APHA pegs the negative economic impact of extreme drinking at $150 billion a year. There have been no documented cases of lung cancer in a marijuana-only smoker, nor has pot been scientifically linked to any kind of cancer. Don't trust an advocate's take on this? Well, try the fair and balanced coverage over at Fox. Alcohol abuse contributes to a multitude of long-term negative health consequences, notably cirrhosis of the liver and a variety of cancers. While a small quantity taken daily is being touted for its salutary health effects, alcohol is one of the worst drugs one can take for pain management. Marijuana, one of the best. Alcohol contributes to acts of violence. Marijuana reduces aggression. In approximately 3 million cases of reported violent crimes last year, the offender had been drinking. This is particularly true in cases of domestic violence, sexual assault, and date rape. Marijuana use in and of itself is absent from both crime reports and the scientific literature. There is simply no link to be made. Over the past 4 years, I have asked police officers throughout the U.S. and in Canada two questions. When's the last time you had to fight someone under the influence of marijuana? I'm talking marijuana only, not pot plus a six-pack or a fifth of tequila. My colleagues pause, they reflect, their eyes widen as they realize that in their 5 or 15 or 30 years on the job, they have never had to fight a marijuana user. Then I ask, when's the last time you had to fight a drunk? They look at their watches and calculate the amount of minutes. All of which begs the question, if one of these two drugs is implicated in dire health effects, high mortality rates, and physical violence, and the other is not, what are we to make of our nation's marijuana laws? Or alcohol laws, for that matter? Anybody out there want to launch a campaign for the reprohibition of alcohol? I didn't think so. The answer, of course, is responsible drinking. Marijuana smokers, for their part, have already shown, apart from that little matter known as the law, greater responsibility in their choice of drugs than those of us who choose alcohol. End of quote. Well, if you have any material you'd like for me to include in the next few days, just email me at baronofarizona@gmail.com. That's baronofarizona@gmail.com. And please indicate where you're listening to this program from. Oh, and one more thing today. Actually, this is from a few weeks back before the program started production, but I still like it. A different retired police chief says that he was robbed by probably the dumbest criminal in Pennsylvania at a police officers' convention. John Camperetto said that he came out of a stall in a men's room when a man pointed a gun in his face and demanded money. There were 300 narcotics officers from Pennsylvania and Ohio at the gathering at that moment. Oops. Of course, if you don't like this news, you always have the option of making some news yourself. In Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie. Until tomorrow, have yourselves some peace and oranges.